Now, it's Gabe time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's Gabe time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Well, I got to say, it feels good to be back in the seat, in the studio, in the saddle. Although, being back in Memphis last night, I'll get to this in a second. I just spent a weekend out in San Diego, had to come back to this weather, and summer is in full swing. That didn't feel the greatest. But it is Monday, June 24, 2024, and it's time for the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on @G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. It's the first time in a while. That's Connor Dunning on XZ99. Connor, what's happening, man?
What's up, man?
You got some butterflies today?
It feels like the first time. Maybe not use that song to describe our relationship. All right.
Well, hey, I threw it out there. 2 hours to talk, though. 2 hours to talk. We're not going to get to the third hour because we have to pass you off to ESPN. We'll pass you off to the NBA draft because it is a draft week.
It is.
The NBA draft will be coming up on Wednesday, but it is draft week. And we have a lot of things to work through. In the Blitz, we'll talk about Marcus Smart. Those rumors are all over the place, aren't they?
All over the place.
There's some publications that say that the Grizzlies want to stick by him, and there's some publications saying that he is open for business. I don't know what to think, but we'll talk about it. Also, will the Grizzlies stay at 9? Will they trade up? Plenty to get to there, but we have 2 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll talk about, because something I missed late last week, drama with the Memphis Tiger basketball program.
You don't say.
Yeah, but I had, we had avoided it while I was in studio, and then as soon as I leave studio, here it comes. Penny Hardaway speaks on the TaylorMade podcast with Marcus Taylor, and lets his thoughts be known about where he's at with the media and fans, and if he's appreciated enough, give some life updates in general. I'll give you a really positive one here in a second in the life of Penny Hardaway as well. Also, Antoine Hill Jr. over the weekend. How about this, Connor? 4-star, 12th quarterback, or ranked in 247's rankings in the entire country, commits to the University of Memphis on Instagram. I believe Quavo was with him on that. It's a different day. It's a different day. So we'll talk about that as well. We also have some NBA head coaching, head coaching hires. J.J. Redick, officially, as of today, officially the Lakers announced it. I have some pretty strong thoughts on that. Although, I think Shams Charania, do you think he's doing a victory lap at home right now?
Probably so.
Yeah, I think he's feeling pretty good about himself because he was on that from the beginning. And then Woj came in with the Danny Hurley news, and ultimately it lands back at J.J. Redick, which is what Shams had at the very beginning. And we also have Kenny Atkinson potentially getting hired by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Good hire.
Yeah, compared to the previous one, the former, probably a decent hire. We'll talk to David Cobb at 5 o'clock from CBS Sports. He was just on with Jeffrey and company. So you've already heard him for 2 hours. You're going to hear him for another 30 minutes starting at 5 o'clock. We will move the Blitz up to hour number 2 because we won't have a third hour, so that'll be at 5:30. And then we'll wrap up the show, Small Talk Rewind, at around 5:50. But something I missed while I was out of town. Well, first, let me do this. When did the weather switch completely? Did it switch while I was out of town?
It was sometime at the end of last week is when it began switching.
Got onto the plane in San Diego, California. That's what made this harder. That's what made it a lot harder when I got to Memphis. Get in, it was probably about 75 degrees, sunny, not a cloud in the sky, nice ocean breeze hitting my back. It felt great. And that was about 1 p.m. I end up getting in, because I had a few delays, at about 11 p.m. last night to Memphis International. Walk outside for the first time, 88 degrees and 75% humidity.
Yeah.
That was not the best welcome I could have had coming back to the city.
Grabbed you by the back of the neck.
It really did. It didn't feel great. At 11 p.m., can we at least like have it cool down? Can it cool down a tad bit? But while I was out, I heard that we had some feels like 108 days, things like that. So I missed some of it, but now it's in the full.
It's too damn hot outside.
We're in full swing.
I mowed my lawn this morning and damn near had a heat stroke.
This is the time of year where I have, you know, like I think back to conditioning out on the turf field at the University of Memphis, and it just depresses me thinking back on some of those days and how badly it felt.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, you grew up in it. You had to do some level of conditioning. You played sports growing up.
I did, but it wasn't. We can be honest about it. It wasn't this hot usually back then, so it was a little bit better. But no, it's. I don't understand people who can exist or have existed without AC. Like that is whenever somebody has a conversation about, well, if I could go back in time, I'd go back to the Wild West. Hell no, they don't have AC back then. I can only go as far back as AC. That's as far back as I will possibly go. The fact that people live without it, lunatics.
Like, at the very least, a wall unit. Give me a wall
unit.
Come
well, just recently, we had family.
Window unit.
We had family that came in town from Oregon. And in Oregon, they don't have ACs because they said that it only gets into the 80s or 90s, like, 1 week out of the year. And they were like, yeah, so we don't have AC units at all because it's just always 70 degrees. And I was like, oh,
the city
God.
Of San Diego just throws me off, though. It has, like, one of the most, it's the tip of Southern California. And you would think that some days it get to 100. Yeah, inland, sure, it can get to 100.
But you're not
right
underwater.
There on the coast. Oh my! It's dry. It's 75 all of the time, no matter what the sun is looking like that day. You can get burnt to shreds and still 72 degrees. It is. It's beautiful stuff. But yeah, there's that. There's that. I'm glad to be back.
Welcome back.
But the weather definitely kicked me in my ass last night at 11 p.m. Now, let's get on to Penny Hardaway, because I missed this the back half of last week, and I know a lot of people discussed it already, and maybe I'm a little late to the conversation, but I feel like I certainly need to add. But he was on the TaylorMade podcast with Marcus Taylor and just sort of talked through some of the things that may be bugging him right this second. Now, he did talk about his mom. Now, the positive update there, with his mom's throat cancer, it looks like she's in full remission. She got to ring the bell today. That was phenomenal to see. Very, very happy for Faye that they're moving through that. She's in remission. And, you know, you can focus your efforts and everything else into, you know, your daily job if you're Penny Hardaway and not have to deal with that consistently. But that's not obviously the main thing there. The main thing is that Faye is working back to full health, and that's just phenomenal. For her to be in remission, we know that cancer, you know, takes a lot of people into the deep end. It certainly took her into the deep end. But to be able to come out of that and get into remission is phenomenal. Now, on Penny Hardaway and what he said on the TaylorMade podcast with Marcus Taylor, let's start from the beginning. He said, quote, it's not even about reporting, talking about fans and the media. It's not even about reporting what we do and how we do it. It's more personal. He said it was more personal, some of the things he's heard from the media. I can read through all of it. I see everything. I keep all receipts. I just laugh because every single thing this year, from the smallest thing that has been reported or an article written on it, there's been a lot more negative and personal things toward me this year out of all the years, because to me, it was a layup. Now, I'll say this to Penny. I think, yeah, it was a layup because, one, the on-court product was not up to snuff. It wasn't good enough. You lost seven. You were 7-8 in your last 15. You had a first-round exit in the AAC tournament to a bad Wichita State team that you had beat already. Of course it's a layup. But also, the other part of this that I need acknowledgement for from Penny Hardaway, and maybe a little bit of growth here, you got to understand a lot of the things that were written and reported from the media about you last year were things you created after that South Florida game in the snow when you barely had a fan base there and you were up by 20 at half. You give up that lead, you lose, and it starts you on this downward trajectory. After the game, you talked about how badly your team was missing the team chemistry aspect of everything. That was what we were discussing and what was written about consistently down the stretch of the season. The reason that was a layup is because you told everybody in the media that was the case. And of course it became a layup and a talking point and a narrative at that point. So I think he needs to understand last year, yeah, you didn't perform up to snuff, but also you led the media and some of the fans down the path of speculating about your team. And I don't think it's fair to put that in their court. That's firmly in your court. You're the one who created those things.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. We knew there were issues happening because you could see the play on the court, and we all felt like it was kind of being held together by a string. And then when Caleb Mills went down, I think all of us said, uh-oh, something could go wrong here. But we were unaware, to be quite honest, of the effort issues and the lack of chemistry and the leadership issues that were happening within the locker room. Those came to light from a Penny Hardaway presser. And that's why, you know, I understand that sometimes it can feel like criticism from the fan base, or when you're on Twitter, it can feel like the entire world. And yes, we can be honest about it. Some fans take it way too far. I'm not sure I agree that the media ever made it personal. I don't think that necessarily ever happened. And I think nationally,
sure.
I'm talking strictly
local. We're talking
locally,
though.
I think that also media gets thrown around a lot, loosely, to some people who may not actually be
100%.
Media. So I'll just leave that there. At the end of the day, though, the entire idea that the media, local media, wants Penny Hardaway to fail is ridiculous.
It's always been ridiculous.
Craziest idea I've ever heard. All of us want Penny Hardaway to be successful, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to criticize the team in moments where we have to. Because if we came on these airwaves last year when they were 7-8 in those last few games, and we tried to tell you that it was all sunshine and rainbows, we would have lost credibility. We can't talk that way. We've got to tell the truth about what's going on. But to his point, there's a line where you don't make it personal, and that's the dance that we have to do with these jobs, that we've got to be able to talk about these players and these programs without trying to make it personal. And that's why I think, to be quite honest, most of us did a pretty good job of being like, listen, it's not going well right now, but it doesn't mean they can't eventually turn it around and have a better season last year. But there is no way to paint last season as anything else but a disaster.
Yes.
It was everything was free-falling by the end of the year, and we have to talk about that. And we can't just ignore it.
And to your point, where there's some thought, you want Penny to fail, you see some of that out there in social media, which I don't take that very seriously anyway. But the quote-unquote media that you speak of that wants Penny to fail, do you realize how much better our jobs go here at 92.9? The jobs of the writers over at the Commercial Appeal and the Daily Memphian that cover the Tiger basketball team. Do you realize how much better and how much they thrive when Penny Hardaway and this Memphis basketball program is going on the up and up, is playing well? You get more clicks, you get more listens, they listen to the podcast more. That's how this thing works. The thought that you want the Memphis basketball team to fail and Penny Hardaway to fail at coaching this Memphis basketball team is absolute lunacy. And to be honest with you, I think even more so than any other coach in the history of this program, you want to see Penny Hardaway do it, because that adds to the story. That adds to everything going on with this program. You have somebody who is this is his alma mater. He really cares about it. He's larger than life, four-time NBA All-Star, All-NBA type guy in the 90s and early 2000s.
He's a legend.
He's an absolute legend. For him to take this program to heights that we've never seen, I don't think there's anybody in the media that doesn't want to see that. I think most people in the media, especially locally, want to see Penny Hardaway take off. We could have the discussion about national, because I always thought that there's definitely always animosity with former coaches. You know, he comes from the AAU ranks, and they had to go through a bunch of assistant jobs. They definitely have made things over the years personal.
Sure.
But the local media, I see none of that. Next to none of that, at the very least.
It may have happened a few times here and there. But yeah, but at the end of the day, we can say all of these things, but it's a results business. The wins or losses are what we've got to talk about. It's what we've got to report on. It's what you've got to be asked about. So I understand that. I get his frustration. I get it. You can feel it, because he's like, I'm putting everything I have into this program. And on the other side, all I'm seeing is negativity. And it's like, but it's because
when you throw your all at something and it doesn't work out exactly how you want, I can see where people get completely peeved.
It's difficult. It's difficult.
And
to
Penny Hardaway, let's be honest, he feels like he's doing the right things at every turn. Like he hasn't made a decision probably in his entire career at Memphis that he thinks was the wrong decision.
Sure,
he's very.
And that's where the disconnect may happen.
That's where the disconnect may happen. Now, he went on to say, I'm not going into my seventh year where I want to be because my standards are high. Mm-hmm. But per college coach and the ladders that you're climbing, I was really ascending until this year. When we failed, it doesn't sit well with me. Well, that's good. It shouldn't sit well with you. I think you were ascending up until last year, really coming out of going into conference play. You were ascending.
It was great.
Top 10 team in the country.
We were
felt
partying.
Good, felt awesome. And then it completely fell off the face of the earth. And at some point, you have to understand that. And then he went on to say, you've got somebody in your corner always constantly thinking about how to be better, how to get it right, talking about himself. I'll be the first one to go, hey, man, I can't do it. I'm done, before I let someone else that's just a hater tell me you need to leave. I don't think that there's a lot of people in this city that are to be taken seriously in the public eye, in the media that have ever called for Penny Hardaway's job. The assumption has always been, especially after last year, get it going in the right direction, or those conversations could happen. There's always going to be first name, bunch of numbers on Twitter, on X, on Instagram, whatever the hell you're following on social media, that's going to call for your job when things don't go right, when you lose a singular game. You can't focus on that. But of the voices and opinions that matter in this city, I've seen none of that. I've seen none of those people saying, you need to leave. You need to stop being the coach of the University of Memphis Tigers basketball
club. What you're saying is you have seen some people point out, listen, we are getting into a season now where they have got to have success. You've got to. It's just, we all know the numbers. We all know the wins in the tournament. We all know the tournament appearances. I understand that last year you lost Caleb Mills. That's a major injury, but that season should not have gone the way that it did. You should have made the tournament, no doubt about it. You shouldn't have lost the first game to Wichita State. We've got to be able to talk about these things. And yes, if they have a season again this upcoming year that is filled with drama, that is free-falling, discussions will be had. But you know who we also had discussions like that about? Ryan Silverfield. We had discussions about that before last season and during last season. All, to be quite honest, until the Liberty Bowl, we were having discussions about, oh, is it time to start talking about Ryan Silverfield's job? And then cut to Antoine Hill Jr., and all of a sudden they're a hopeful for the college football playoff. And that's how fast things can turn. And that's why a major conversation that we've been having specifically on the show this offseason is that we were hoping that Penny Hardaway and his staff looked at last year and told the truth about it and said, last year was terrible, how it ended. There's no way in hell that can be repeated in the next season. What lessons can we take from last year and put them onto this season and operate in a different way? And so far, it appears like it is going in the right direction. And that's why I have some optimism about this upcoming season. But at the end of the day, this season will be defined by, do you make it to the NCAA tournament?
It's a bottom-line, results-driven business.
The bar for success for this season will be, did you make the NCAA tournament? And to be quite honest, you should probably win a game.
It's one win in 7 years going into year seven. I mean, it's the truth of the matter.
Some criticism is warranted here in parts.
Yeah, and then here's before we get to Antoine Hill Jr., who you brought up, I was taken aback by the final quote that really made me.
Yeah, didn't like this.
He said, I feel like if I leave, it's going to go down hard. So I got to take the bumps and the hits. I'm fighting in the ring and in the corner right now. I'm fighting both. He feels as if the University of Memphis basketball program, we're taking him for granted. The player getting aspect. We may think there's more NIL running through that program. He feels as if this program without him would be in shambles. Now, I'll say this. I think there's not really another coach in the country that would take this job right this second that could get the level of talent that Penny Hardaway gets. I do think there are other coaches in the country who probably are better X's and O's. I think that much is very clear. But what I will say is this is still a wanted job around the country. This is still at the top of the mid-major ranks, and I know people have been having discussions about that and been angry with the mid-major designation. But when you look at this job, 2 years ago, I have some stats for it, top 20 in expenses for any basketball program in America, up there with the UConns of the world, up there with some of the schools that you see consistently competing for Final Fours and Elite Eights. And you just know from a historical standpoint that there would be coaches lining up at the door if Penny Hardaway was to fail to take this job. I disagree with his sentiment altogether. I think there's too many resources, too many people that care about this program. Yeah, you could have a couple of bottom-out years, but eventually I think this program gets their feet back under them with or without Penny Hardaway. I just disagree with that sentiment altogether. There's too much money, too many people that care for this program to completely bottom out.
Well said. I didn't think it was respectful toward the fans and toward the program at a whole.
And I think it's just a strange direction for Penny Hardaway to go.
Yeah, it was odd.
I don't think it was very measured. Some of the things he says, you know, you want to think that every coach is going to be very measured with their thought process and what they say outwardly to the media. I don't think that was very measured, though. I thought that was a very emotional state he was in, and he just threw it out there as fact when it's not fact. I don't see that. I don't see this program flailing around for years on end if Penny Hardaway is not the coach.
No, and I understand that some people have brought up Tubby Smith in those years as an example, but I just think that was a bad hire. Tubby was just a bad hire. He didn't fit the city. He didn't want to do what was necessary to make the job work, specifically with recruiting. Yeah. Whoever they would bring in after Penny, which, to be quite honest, I hope doesn't happen.
Yeah,
I hope
sure.
I hope that this season is crazy 100%. Successful and all of this we look back on and laugh at. Hey, remember when we had all these conversations about this, and that, and that? I'm hoping for a successful season, but if it ever came to be where Penny was no longer the coach of the University of Memphis, yes, you're going to have a somewhat of a dip going from Penny to the next person, but I don't think the program would fall completely with that.
My question to Penny would be, how far are you falling?
Yeah.
How far are you falling? Because two tournament appearances, one tournament win in 6 years. How far are you falling? Are you talking about a team that's going to be at the bottom of the American Athletic Conference? That's not going to happen.
Right.
Resource-wise, it's just not even really possible. Even with Tubby Smith, he won 20 games 1 year while he was here.
Like, He just didn't want to update
his thought process to the modern era of college basketball and college athletics. When you talk about this program falling off without Penny Hardaway, what exactly does he mean? I would love to pick his brain about that, but obviously I don't think we're going to be able to do that. Now on to some positive news on the Memphis football side. Antoine Hill Jr. committed to Memphis over the weekend, and we thought that he was going to do it in July. I think it was going to be on his birthday originally, but he ends up committing over the weekend. I had heard he had a soft commit while he was on campus. That's just how these things work, but he wanted to announce it. Quavo was there. They did a little Instagram video. Commits to the University of Memphis, number 12 quarterback in the entire country, number one in Georgia, according to 247. And according to On3, the 6'5", 220-pound quarterback from Warner Robins, Georgia, becomes the highest-ranked quarterback to commit to Memphis in the modern ranking era. Now, let's not fool ourselves. There's definitely some monetary value being thrown around behind the scenes to get him to come to the University of Memphis. But I even saw our site talk about it and said, you know, Antoine Hill Jr. picks FedEx over Florida. I don't know if that's telling the whole story. Sure, yes, you have a very similar NIL offer from Florida to Memphis because of FedEx and what they've done to throw down a bunch of money. But at the same time, I'll go through it again. The reasons that Antoine Hill Jr. ultimately was swayed to pick the University of Memphis were probably football reasons. There are probably football reasons. Coaching, Silverfield, just signed an extension, looking to, you know, continue coaching this program heading into the future, whereas at Florida, you have Billy Napier with the hardest schedule in college football, and he has not been good. He's on the hot seat. He's going to have to prove everybody wrong to even keep that job. And then when you talk about opportunity, Memphis has Seth Hennigan outgoing after this year, a guy who may break all the quarterback records here by the time it's all said and done, by the time we get through the end of the season. And after that, you have Arrington Maiden, and you have nobody really else in this quarterback room of note for him to compete with. He could immediately be thrust on the field. Whereas at Florida, you have DJ Lagway. Well, Graham Mertz is starting for one more year. Then you have DJ Lagway, a five-star recruit that they paid millions of dollars in NIL funds to. So, yes, I think the FedEx money absolutely played a part in getting Antoine Hill Jr. here. I'm not denying that. But also, pay attention to the recruiting pitch. Pay attention to what else swayed him to come to the University of Memphis, and it's not that hard to understand why he ended up making the decision he did.
I think the NIL money probably opens up the conversation with guys like this, and it does absolutely put Memphis in a different place than it used to be. It just does, straight up. That NIL FedEx deal is a massive, massive deal, and you're already seeing the fruits of it come to fruition right now. Like, this is such a big deal that Antoine Hill Jr. is a Memphis Tiger. Kudos to the Memphis Tigers recruiting, Ryan Silverfield, and the entire program, because landing him, it just is going to continue this run of quarterbacks that is kind of nuts when you think about it, the success that they have had. Now, my question to you is, do you think that this is signs of things to come for Memphis, or do you think it's going to be a flash in the pan moment for him?
Oh, I think that it's signs of things to come as long as they have success on the field.
Agreed.
After recruiting this type of talent this year, because I don't think they have anything under a three-star, whereas in the past you have to go find the diamonds in the rough. They're finding the same amount of talent. They may break the top 40, top 35 in 247's rankings this year as far as their recruiting class is concerned. That's unheard of. It's absolutely unheard of. But obviously you have to have success on the field to continue to recruit them.
And program consistency.
Yes. Program consistency. And that's what Antoine Hill Jr. does, Connor. That's the other part of this, is it gives you hope and a thought process for the future. It makes things a little less uncertain. it stabilizes you for the time being. I don't know how long it'll take Antoine Hill Jr. once he gets to the University of Memphis to really, and obviously a lot of things can happen. He's just committed at this moment. Somebody could swoop in late and make a
offer. Don't you put that evil on us, Gabe?
I'm just saying, this is how this works.
What are you doing?
But I don't know how long it will take for him to, you know, completely get himself involved and understand the college game and the route tree and all the reads he's supposed to make. But it does give the fan base an understanding of the stability at the quarterback position and what could come after this, after Seth Hennigan, because that was going to be, without Antoine Hill Jr., a complete open book, and anybody's guess is fine there at that point. But now you have Antoine Hill Jr. in the fold, top 15 quarterback recruit in the entire country. You can build on that, and you feel good about it. It feeds not only that program, but the fan base's future thought process on this program.
Where do you think this offseason ranks in terms of all-time offseasons for the Tigers?
Oh, God. That's a great one.
Because if you put the NIL
you could make a real case for it being the best and most to look forward to of any offseason in Memphis football program history.
I think I might agree, because you have NIL, FedEx deal, you have the renovation news, you have a potential college football playoff season coming up, and you have Antoine Hill Jr.
Yes. Like this, I know people have downplayed it to this point, but I think now
and
that
the
we're
Ryan
past,
extension.
We're past the NBA Finals, and we have all this stuff out of the way. I think people are going to start honing in on what could actually be possible. I don't know if you can make a case that this is not the biggest, most expectation that has been placed on a Memphis football program in the history of the program, right? Like, this is the biggest year that we've ever seen out of this program. With the college football playoff on the way, with the NIL funds, with what you could do, what stratosphere you could put yourself in, especially at the Group of Five level. This is the biggest year in Memphis football program history.
Well, and that's why we've talked about it. With, you know, the excitement and the momentum that the team have comes great expectations. You and I have said a few times, 10 or 11 wins is the bar for success. Like, we talked about Penny's bar of success is making the tournament and winning a game. Guess what, Ryan? It's winning 11 games for you, dude.
Well,
and a conference championship.
It's conference championship.
Yeah. That's the expectation.
Honestly, appearance at the least, and I think some people would argue win the conference championship.
That's might be that person.
But now with this is also fun. With Antoine Hill Jr. committing, now we turn our eyes to his teammate.
Yes.
His teammate, four-star offensive lineman Peyton Joseph, who is down to two schools, one being in Florida and one in Memphis. Tell me if you've heard that before. Florida State and Memphis. But he's a high school teammate of Antoine Hill Jr., and maybe there could be some sway there from Antoine to try to get Peyton Joseph, four-star offensive lineman, to the University of Memphis. Now, he would, in the 247 rankings, be the highest recruit in the history of the University of Memphis.
He would get him?
He would edge him out. I think he's a top 150 guy.
Wow.
According to 247. So I think it's 50-50 right now.
Very exciting.
According
times.
To Jonah Dillon, he said 50-50 between Florida State and Memphis. But we'll see when he ultimately commits and what that looks like.
I can't wait for the season. Very exciting time to be a Memphis Tiger football fan.
100%. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note and get into some NBA coaching carousel as J.J. Redick, according to the Lakers. I mean, we knew that this was going to happen, but J.J. Redick, according to the Lakers today, and their main page on socials, and they sent out the shout, it looks like we have pen to paper. J.J. Redick will be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. What do I think about that? I'll tell you that next, 92.9 FM ESPN. But none other than J.J. Redick taking a four-year contract to be the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. He is doing, I believe, his media rounds right now. I think he's been introduced already. Sort of first question there. That he responded to was, what have you thought of all of the discussion around you taking this job for the past, you know, 2 months or so since the Lakers season ended? And he said, I don't give an F. So that's a good start. That's a good start for J.J. Redick. But J.J. Redick takes over after having not been an NBA coach or a coach at any level previously. I think he was a fourth grade volunteer basketball coach this season. That's the first experience he had. But we know he has a wealth of basketball knowledge from years and years in the NBA. He definitely knows how to draw up some offensive sets. We'll see what he can do defensively, because I think that's what he really needs to. If he's going to get this Lakers team and maximize what they have, he's got to get back to a defensive identity that they didn't seem to have last year. But he's only 1 year older, or I think less than a year older than LeBron James, who is his podcast co-host. He did say he's not going to be doing podcasts anymore, so we have gotten that completely confirmed. He's going to be doing no media hits. But J.J. Redick to the Lakers. I want to make this very, very clear. This is a LeBron James hire. This is a hire that is not made unless LeBron James is somewhere in the conversation. They started a podcast together. They continued down that path the entire back half of this year. And J.J. Redick was not very involved in other coaching searches. As much as we heard and we discussed and people tried to report that LeBron James was not part of this coaching search at all, the fact that J.J. Redick is involved and ultimately got the job shows me and tells me maybe it was not directly LeBron saying you have to hire him or I won't sign back. I don't think that was the conversation. But if LeBron James was not involved with this Lakers franchise right now, J.J. Redick does not get the job. That's the first truth I want to make very clear and how I feel about this hire.
But Gabe, in his presser, he said that he did not discuss it with LeBron James.
Yes. I thought Brian Windhorst put it pretty funny and honestly pretty good. He said, you know, everybody was worried about J.J. Redick doing his first interview with the Lakers, and he finally did his interview, ultimately gets hired. But Brian Windhorst said, you know, he was interviewing the entire time there with LeBron James, running through all of the sets that the Lakers ran or didn't run, what worked, what didn't. That's what they did on Mind the Game the entire back half of the season, is trying to pinpoint the Lakers' issues and what they need to run on out-of-bounds plays and everything else. Those in themselves were kind of interviews. You pay attention to those things when you're making a hire.
Serious question. We can, you know, it's ridiculous, the entire idea that LeBron wasn't involved in the coaching hire, that they didn't talk about it. Of course they did. That's just silly. Serious question, though. Should they consider maybe removing those podcasts now that he's the coach of the Lakers? Because some of the things that they discussed, I wonder, is it common basketball knowledge, or is it things that they are going to try to do with the Lakers?
Yeah. Those, you're going to keep those up. They're going to keep those
probably
up.
Keep them up.
But at the same time, but yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, I guess you could get a beat on them if you want to know about their out-of-bounds plans and everything else with J.J. Redick as the head coach. But I think that film will tell us all we need to know as soon as we... I'm just curious how he's actually going to fare, because I think this roster, the truth of the matter is, it's not ready to go win a championship. Mm-hmm. It's not ready to make a run to the Western Conference Finals. I know the Western Conference seems wide open, and the Mavs made it there, and we've had five different Western Conference winners in 5 years. I understand all of that. But when you look at this roster, it's LeBron James, it's Anthony Davis, it's very top heavy. Then you have to decide what's actually going to fit alongside the rest of those guys. They have a lot of money invested in those two guys. What else can they afford outside of them? Can they make some trades this offseason? They're going to have a pick in the NBA draft because the Pelicans were nice enough to sort of throw them that bone. But we'll see what they do with that. For J.J. Redick to be able to keep this job, it's going to be an uphill battle the entire time. That's the other truth we have to get down to. If it was a Danny Hurley hire and you gave him the job for 6 to 8 years, you know that you're going to, you know, go through the LeBron AD era and then move into the future, and you can bring along a young team and maybe you get re-upped if you do a good job with that. This hire is strictly for the rest of the LeBron AD era, isn't it? I mean, there doesn't seem to be much of a plan after that.
Maybe.
You know, considering who J.J. Redick is as a guy. Now, we've seen this work in the past with former players. Steve Kerr, we've seen it. But he also was an assistant on some benches, and he was in the front office helping people. J.J. Redick is coming cold out of a booth from the media to coach the Los Angeles Lakers. It just, to me, does not feel like a recipe to a Lakers franchise who is hungry for a championship that I don't know they can actually achieve with the roster they have. It just feels like you're sort of setting them up for a little bit of failure, potentially to get fired here, maybe before the 4 years contract is actually up.
It's just an underwhelming Lakers hire. You expect them to be able to go out there and get a coach because it's the Los Angeles Lakers and all the history, and LeBron's there and AD's there, and then you end up with J.J. Redick. It's a bit underwhelming. I think that J.J. could be a good NBA coach, but this is a very difficult situation he's walking into, most notably because of the roster right now. They do not have a point guard. You've got to figure out what you want to do with D'Angelo Russell. You've got to make sure that LeBron's going to be cool with the... It's just they have a lot of holes that they still need to fill right now, and they are depending a lot on a 39-year-old LeBron James, an AD who's going to be another year older. They have got to get some players in there that can actually help them win. And we've discussed it. They've got to get out of this mindset of, well, we got to have three guys and then, you know, rotation guys around them. No, you need to have a full roster now. The way that you win in today's NBA, it has changed over the last few years. So they've got to change their philosophy as an organization when they're doing free agency, when they're looking for trades, when they're in the draft. You can't just be looking for a quote-unquote big three, because that's how D'Angelo Russell ended up there. That's how Russell Westbrook ended up there. You've got to find depth. Depth wins NBA championships now. Go look at the last few winners. It has been, you have a superstar player, but then you have roster depth and guys that can do everything. You can go five out with guys. The Lakers cannot do that right now. And unfortunately, if it doesn't work out, JJ will be the first guy to go, because it's going to be put on the head coach.
What really does strike me, though, about the Lakers organizationally is there is a just obvious lack of direction. They don't really know what they want to do, and they're kind of being held hostage a little bit by the LeBron era.
You can also argue he saved them.
He did save them.
They were
flailing. Also, I think they're kind of in this moment where it's like, yeah, we want to go for a championship, but how realistic is that with the roster we have right this second? Because think about the two guys that they were closest to hiring, and then they ultimately hired J.J. Redick. One was Dan Hurley. Dan Hurley is strictly a future. Not strictly a future hire, but it's a hire to get past this era, move into the future, have him develop a young team. Let's move in that direction. J.J. Redick is almost strictly a hire for here, now, and then we'll see after that.
Right.
4 years versus potential 6 to 8 years. There's just no real direction the Lakers have picked here. They were forced, almost pigeonholed, into taking J.J. Redick at this point because of the way the coaching search went, so they can just deal with the next 4 years ahead of them. But 4 years on a head coaching contract, let's be honest, very, very short, very short-sighted, and, you know, it's very clear they're not thinking about anything after LeBron and AD, whereas with Danny Hurley, it seemed like they were moving that direction.
Right. One of the reasons we liked the Hurley connection was because it felt like the first move in a long time the Lakers would be making for life after LeBron James. And, you know, this J.J. Redick, you cannot pretend as if it is not a LeBron hire and not for the LeBron era. And you ask, is J.J. going to be here after LeBron? Maybe. How do they do in these next few years? How do they do? Does he show enough, even if they may not win a championship, does he show enough as an NBA head coach where they say, okay, we can keep him around? Because LeBron is 39 years old. He is 39 years old. He's not going to be playing basketball that much longer. I love him. I love watching him play, but we've got to be honest about it. He's only got a couple years left on him, which is still crazy to say, but they've got to start getting ready for life after LeBron, and this is not a move to do that. Hurley would have been, and then they lowballed him, which was the craziest thing. Yes. How do you let the rumor of $100 million get out
there? 8 years, $100 million.
And then you're like, we're going to give him 70, and it's like, get the hell out of here. Yeah. You know when they put that contract in front of him, he was like, I came across the country for this? I'm out. No, of course he didn't take that job. So it's underwhelming, and I hope J.J. does well. I like J.J. Redick. I'm a fan of his. I'm glad they're not doing podcasts anymore. Take away that distraction. But I'm worried that it may not work out. But specifically, it's because of the roster they have right now. It is not built to win an NBA championship. They have a lot of things that they need to work on. And I do wonder, though, with LeBron opting out, maybe he is one of the ways that they could have success is he takes a team-friendly deal, but at this stage in his career, is LeBron going to do
have
that?
Have you heard Rich Paul talk lately?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, exactly. He ain't doing that.
So
he's
not
doing that.
Still being kind of held, you know, hostage is kind of a strong word, but it is, they live and die by LeBron right now, for better or worse.
Yes, and there's no real thought of what's next. Danny Hurley, you thought, okay, maybe they're going
until
down this
they
path
draft
of trying
Bronny.
To think of what's next. But this
Bronny
hire,
will
no.
be for the future.
When's he gonna go, by the way? I've been out of the office for a minute. What's the new rumor about Bronny?
Parker put him at 60.
He should be a second round pick if he's gonna get picked. He's an undrafted free agent, though. That's what it tells me. His entire resume tells me yes, he should be an undrafted.
Did you see what Bill Simmons said?
No, I did not.
That coming off of a Celtics championship, he had to twist the knife a little bit to the Lakers. He said the Celtics should draft him and like hold him hostage.
Yeah, that's a Bill Simmons take.
It's like, come on, man, you just won a title.
Now the Cavs too. Moving on to the Cavs, I feel way differently about this hire than I do about the Lakers hire. I feel good about this hire. I think this is a good hire for the Cavs. Hiring Golden State assistant coach Kenny Atkinson as their next head coach. They're working on a contract. It should be completed here relatively soon. Looks like Donovan Mitchell, as soon as he heard the news, it looks like he's going to re-up and stay around and want to stay around in Cleveland. Another guy worth mentioning who was kind of a Grizzlies target was Jared Allen. Jared Allen played for Kenny Atkinson when he was with the Brooklyn Nets and played really well. That's it. That was his intro into the NBA and being a really good five. I think he had 10 points per game, about around 8 rebounds per game, around 2 blocks per game under Kenny Atkinson in a smaller role. So maybe that keeps Jared Allen around. But I like this hire. A very experienced head coach, a guy who's been trying to break back in for quite a while. I thought he maximized for a couple of years the Brooklyn Nets teams that were just not very good, not star-studded by any stretch of the imagination. Kenny Atkinson with the Cavs, I think, could be a I'm not going to say home run hire, but I think it could be a great hire for them going into the future.
It's solid. It's a solid hire. They took a risk. You know, we were under the opinion that J.B. Bickerstaff shouldn't have been fired because they had a successful season. But if you're going to fire someone like that, you have to make sure that you bring in somebody that at the very least is going to be solid. Yeah. And that is Kenny Atkinson is going to be solid. Is he going to take you over the top?
Right.
We'll see. To be honest, though, it's kind of the same conversation with the Lakers.
It's the Cavs. Is your roster going to get there?
No.
Is Donovan Mitchell a number one that you can trust to get you over the top in the East with the Celtics the way they are right now? No. So, like, that's why I'm not saying home run, because I think home run would get you, you know, to an Eastern Conference Finals or into the NBA Finals. But they'll be a top four seed in the East.
Mm-hmm.
With the talent they have accrued, with Evan Mobley still growing up before their eyes, they have plenty to look forward to. But, again, I don't think that it's hiring Kenny Atkinson. I don't think there's any one coach in the NBA that can make or break a championship season, quite frankly. I think it's really hard. Spoelstra, Spo, yeah, potentially. But there's not many out there.
Not many.
That's one of one, really.
Yeah.
And
Pop,
you know,
maybe. We just haven't been able to see it with the roster.
And even if you threw Eric Spoelstra into the head coaching job with the Cavs, I'm not buying that he's going to get over top of the Celtics. I'm not buying that.
Ooh.
I'm not buying that.
No, I just think it's interesting.
It's a hard Eastern Conference right now. We'll see what the Knicks do this offseason. But the Celtics are just sort of right there in your way. If you think you're going to make a run in the Eastern Conference, the Celtics are going to be in your way for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think this is a fine hire. I think this is a fine hire ultimately. Now, we do have a couple of interesting bits of news. OG Anunoby, did you see this? Declined his player option today with the Knicks, so he's going to go in.
Wasn't that expected, though?
He's going into free agency. I think he fits with the Knicks greatly.
Right.
And he's looking for, what, $35 million per?
Pay him.
I would pay him. I don't see it. He made that team substantially better down the stretch of the season. It's just very unlucky that the Knicks ran into as many injuries as they did. Julius Randle and Mitchell Robinson and him as they got
Jalen Brunson broke his hand the last game.
And then Jalen Brunson was hurt as well. It stunk for them that they had to be hampered by injuries. But I think OG Anunoby fits really well. And then Scotty Barnes. How about this? Our man Scotty Barnes for the Raptors got absolutely paid by the Raptors. He has a 5-year max rookie extension that could be worth up to $270 million. He'll become the highest paid player in Raptors history. I don't know what he's actually going to do with the Raptors. They're going to have to really fix that roster going forward. But Scottie Barnes is a hellacious defender, a really good offensive player, and he's been coming into his own the past couple of years. You need to keep him around. I just don't know what he's actually going to do with the Raptors. I feel like that franchise is in a free fall.
When you look at his numbers, you say, how in the hell is he worth that amount of money? But you're paying for the future Scotty Barnes. And you're kind of stuck behind a rock in a hard place right now. If you're the Toronto Raptors, you have to pay him. You have to pay him. What else are you going to do?
He's 22 years old.
He's been productive. He's got a lot of talent. He's got a lot of potential. And he is going to be the cornerstone of whatever this next era of Raptors basketball is going to look like. So you had to pay him. I understand it.
What is the next era? That's the biggest problem with the Raptors right now. What the hell am I looking forward to? Who is going to rise?
Grady Dick.
Are we gonna make some trades?
Grady Dick will rise.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
That's why I'm here.
But who else is gonna come along to actually bolster that roster put them into actual contention in the East? I can't see it right now. We'll see though. That's a high paid Scotty Barnes though.
They are just now going into rebuild mode. Well, I think that we can all agree that they probably held on a little bit too long, but they do have RJ Barrett, they have Scotty Barnes, you've got Emmanuel Quickley. You've got to make sure that you hit on these next few drafts.
Yeah. And maybe try to see what you can do to find another player that's proven. They're in rebuild mode, I understand, but sometimes you have to speed that up a little bit. You throw a contract to Scotty Barnes like this. Let's see if we can work some pieces in around him. Another star.
They've got good players. They just don't have somebody that can put them all together. They're lacking a glue guy. They're lacking a couple glue guys. They've got talented basketball players, but they're not good enough to really get over the hump. He's like Emmanuel Quickley, Gary Trent Jr., great three-point shooter, R.J. Barrett, a lot of potential, Scotty Barnes, Jacob Poyle, like Grady Dick, Bruce Brown. They've got guys. It's just guys that are probably better on other teams.
Yes. Yeah. They've got a bunch of fours and fives. Yeah. They're not quite the Nets, but they kind of have that. We have a lot of trade deadline pieces that we could dangle in front of you and try to go get assets with. That's sort of what they
because
have.
Because right realistically, what would Scotty Barnes be on a contending team? Probably your
McHale, maybe a little less. Mikal Bridges,
I would say like
a little less.
Probably your third guy.
Yeah.
You'd want him to be your third guy.
Yeah. And we see the Nets trying to still build around Mikal Bridges. Yeah. But at the same time, that's what he would be in a winning situation, a championship situation.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens with it. We need to go ahead and transition into hour number two. And joining me, as he does every single Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that'd be David Cobb. You heard him on Jeffrey and Company for 2 hours not too long ago. So he'll be in studio with me right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM.
Over the hump. Emmanuel Quickley, Gary Trent Jr., great three-point shooter, R.J. Barrett, a lot of potential, Scotty Barnes, Jacob Poyle, like Grady Dick, Bruce Brown. They've got guys. It's just guys that are probably better on other teams.
Yes. Yeah.
They've got a bunch of fours and fives.
Yeah. They're not quite the Nets, but they kind of have that. We have a lot of trade deadline pieces that we could dangle in front of you and try to go get assets with. That's sort of what they have.
Because realistically, what would Scotty Barnes be on a contending team? Probably your
McHale, maybe a little less. McHale Bridges,
I would say
maybe
like
a little less.
Probably your third guy.
Yeah.
You'd want him to be your third guy.
Yeah. And we see the Nets trying to still build around Mikal Bridges. But at the same time, that's what he would be in a winning situation, a championship situation.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens with it. We need to go ahead and transition into hour number two. And joining me, as he does every single Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that'd be David Cobb. You heard him on Jeffrey and Company for 2 hours not too long ago. So he'll be in studio with me right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM.